taking their place in a long true line of everyday Americans,
helping to secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. This is the Constitution Study on the America Out Loud Network with your host, Paul Engel.
Pay the bills, stay out of jail, love the neighbors and have a few good friends. Every day you are everyday Americans.
Hello there, everyday Americans. Welcome to the Constitution Study. This is where we read and study the Constitution and we teach the rising generation to be free. I'm glad you could join me today. I have an interesting topic today, at least it's interesting to me. See, America is a republic. A republic is a situation, is an organization, a commonwealth, as Noah Webster defined it, where the sovereign power of the people is vested in representatives elected by the people. In fact, the Constitution says the United States will guarantee to each state a republican form of government, where, again, the people choose representatives. The people are the sovereigns. They exercise that sovereign power through elected representatives. Yet, more and more, we're drifting away from our republic. And it's not just the constant repetition of the term of American democracy. We are not a democracy. Our founders feared democracy. No, it's not the democracy that I'm worried about. See, we seem to be becoming not so much a democracy, but an oligarchy. And today, I want to talk about the judicial oligarchy. The fact that we have devolved to a place where, in effect, judges rule. I mean, how often have you heard it reported that this judge in this court ruled that such and such has to happen, that such and such is unconstitutional? The only problem is, in America, judges don't rule. At least they're not supposed to. So I want to take some time and look through some of the stories and see if we can figure out how we ended up in a situation where we have these judicial oligarchies and what it is we can do about it. Now let's start. We're going to start here with a story out of Virginia, Loudoun County specifically, and a proposal, a plan to require teachers or any instructor to use a student's preferred pronouns, specifically a transgender student's preferred pronoun. But then again, nowadays, we can't tell the difference. You can't tell the difference between a boy and a girl. How can you tell the difference between a transgender student and a non-transgender student? So the question is, do we have the right of free speech or not? Do you have the right to compel someone else to a certain type of speech? Now, at a county board meeting, he spoke up against the proposal and then 2 days later was suspended pending further investigation of the allegation that he had engaged in contact that had been disruptive impact on the operation of the school. In other words, using a pronoun based on the student's appearance. Now, this Virginia teacher has sued the school. And in fact, a judge has ordered, like to put a little scare quotes around, because I always get nervous when we have judges ordering. Ordering is very close to ruling. But even in this, I found this article in the Daily Signal, and the Daily Signal says that a Virginia court ruled Tuesday. Well, again, courts don't rule. They opine. The judicial power is to give an opinion on a dispute. But according to this judge, the county school system must reinstate the teacher that was suspended for opposing proposed policies requiring the use of preferred pronouns. Now, let's roll back on this just a little bit. We have here an excellent example of a judicial system being used. Now, We all know the First Amendment, right? You have the right to petition the government for a redress of grievances. One of the ways we petition government is via a court, via suit. Now, again, the First Amendment doesn't apply because the First Amendment says Congress shall make no law, and this isn't Congress, and this isn't even a federal court. This is a Virginia court. However, Article 1, Section 12 of the Virginia Constitution says that the freedom of speech and of the press are among the great bulwarks of liberty and can never be restrained except by despotic governments, that any citizen may freely speak, write, and publish his sentiments on all subjects, being responsible for the abuse of that right, that the General Assembly shall not pass any law abridging the freedom of speech or of the press, nor the right of the people to peaceably assemble and to petition the government for a redress of grievances. I say it all the time. We keep looking to the federal government for the First Amendment protections when those protections actually come from the states. So in Virginia, Article 1, Section 12 of their Constitution says that this teacher has a right to petition the government for redress of grievance. What is the grievance? The grievance was that he was suspended for opposing a policy that would violate Article 1, Section 12 of the Constitution of the State of Virginia. Right? It says right there, the General Assembly shall not pass any law abridging the freedom of speech or of the press. This, I guess, technically is a policy of the school board, not the General Assembly. So maybe it actually is not a violation of the Virginia Constitution, but it certainly is a violation of the freedom of speech that, according to the Constitution of Virginia, is the great bulwark of liberty, and that it can never be restrained except by a despotic government. So I guess from that standpoint, we find that this particular school district is run by a despotic government, at least according to the Constitution of Virginia. So this teacher sued. He petitioned the government, which is an important point. Courts are part of the government. They are not independent actors. Now, I'd love courts to be free and independent, but we don't live in the perfect world, right? Every employee of the court, every judge, every bailiff, everybody who works for the court gets a government paycheck, right? So when you go to court with a grievance, you're petitioning the government for a redress of that grievance. Fine. Good. Here in Virginia, a judge looked at the grievance and said, you have a grievance. In my opinion, looking at the law, this school district has violated your rights. They have, and I didn't get into all the details because, you know, let's face it, reading legal opinions is about as, well, it's a bit more exciting than watching paint dry. But they're often filled with legalese and references to stuff that, to me, is really immaterial. Basically, what we have is the way we would hope the system works, right? An ordinary citizen petitions a government for redress. The government, in the form of the courts, looks at this and says, yes, when weighing the law and the facts, the law is on the plaintiff's side. School, you must reinstate him. This is how we would hope it works. But the problem we run into is that we've kind of turned to courts to solve every problem. We've become an extremely litigious society. Now, I don't know if this factoid is true, but I've been told there are more lawyers than doctors in the United States, which tells me people are more worried about the legal issues than they are about their medical issues. But, you know, who knows? That's an unproven fact. But there's also a saying I've heard that the process is the punishment. Which in some ways brings me to an article about the Loudoun County School Board in Loudoun County, Virginia. See, they're being sued over what they refer to as Equity Ambassador Program. Now, for this episode, I'm not so much interested in the details of the equity program or all that. But what we find is that there are lawsuits, plural, that are piling up against this particular school district. See, according to the initial lawsuit, they're saying, quote, In the name of dismantling systemic racism, LCPS, the Loudoun County Public Schools, has implemented explicit racial distinctions between its students. The official LCPS action plan to combat systemic racism creates a new position of student equity ambassadors, which is limited to certain students on account of their race and discriminates against students on the basis of their viewpoint. So the parents sued. Again, they are petitioning the government for a redress of grievance. But what's interesting to me from this standpoint is they're not the only ones. So we have this is the same county, right? You have the lawsuit of the teacher who was suspended for opposing a policy of using preferred pronouns. We now have a suit about, in effect, critical race theory, right? A racist policy. There's another one, the Virginia Project is suing the moderator of an anti-racist parents of Loudoun County. So here we have at least three instances of parents or parental organizations filing suit in Loudoun County, Virginia, between the schools and the activists. Now, this brings to mind a couple of things. One is, what's going on in Loudoun County, Virginia? Has it simply become the hub of wokeism in Virginia, in on the Eastern Seaboard? I don't know. But the other thing I notice is, look at how often our reaction to the illegal actions of government agents, right? Because remember, it's public school or county offices. How often our response is, take them to court, sue them. As if that is our only redress of grievance to the school, is to sue them. Now, I'm not saying they shouldn't be sued. There are a lot of these cases where a civil suit is the right answer. But we've become so dependent. It's like everything that happens, our first reaction is, let's sue somebody. And what does that do? Well, okay, yeah, you can petition for a redress of your grievance, but if that is your only answer, if all you have is the hammer of a lawsuit, every problem gets solved, but gets looked at as a nail, which means every problem appears to be dealt with by another lawsuit. Now, why does that concern me? Well, we're putting an awful lot of power into the hands of judges. Many of them are unelected. I don't know if Virginia elects their judges or not, but we're basically saying our only answer to a government of our creation is to get another part of our creation to tell them no. And that is a concern to me. As a freedom-loving American, we've given up our sovereign power over the state to the courts, which are part of the state. In other words, this teacher who was suspended, is his only redress to sue? Well, he's dealing with a job. How about the parents? Is their only redress to sue? What else are they doing? What other avenues are they looking at? You know, if this Virginia county is so full of issues, woke issues, transgender issues, racial issues, is your only solution begging the Virginia government to fix it? Why? What have the parents done to, fix the school board? What have they done to stand up to these implementations and say, no, you work for us, remember? We elected you, we hired you, we created the government of Virginia, we created you, we can take you out and create another one just like you. When will American citizens start realizing that they are not subjects of their government, they are its masters? Now, let's leave Virginia. We spent a lot of time in Virginia. I want to go up to Rhode Island, where a single woman has basically driven a school district crazy. A school committee in Rhode Island has decided they're not going to sue a woman who has filed over 200 separate public records requests about the integration of critical race theory into lessons in school policies. Now, here is a mother not using the courts, but using freedom of information laws, open records laws, to say, if you're going to do this, you are not going to do this behind closed doors. We are going to be, this is going to be out in the open. And if I got to file, if I got to spend days filling out these requests and submitting them, I will do it because I want the truth out in the open. I want it public. You know, sunlight is the best disinfectant. So here we have a single mom, I don't know if she's married or not, a single person, a mom who said, no, this is not happening unobstructed. So she filed over 200 records requests to the point where the school committee actually considered filing a lawsuit against her. Now, I want to see that argument in court. I want to be the fly on the wall, and I want to see the reaction of the judge when the school says, we have this law that says we're supposed to write open records, and she's just been asking for over and over and over again. What are they suing? What would they sue her for? What grievance would they sue her for? Asking that they fulfill their duty as public servants to provide information to the public about what they're doing? Now, apparently, South Kingston School Committee actually voted unanimously, said, maybe we don't want to do that. Maybe we don't want to actually sue this woman in court. But again, I look at this in regards to today's episode as this woman was actually saved because the school decided not to take this to court. As if the court would be able to turn around and say, no, you're not allowed to get access to the information that you're legally allowed to get access to. I'm not saying the court wouldn't say that. We are dealing with Rhode Island, after all. But it shows our dependence, the reaction to the school of an annoying mom. Let's face it. Those on the committee, this is a nuisance to constantly get these records requests. It's a nuisance. And their first response is, let's sue. And then they think better of it. So since they voted on it, someone must have actually brought up the idea of suing this woman for filing requests under the state's Access to Public Records Act. Have we put too much power in our judiciaries at every level? Well, sometimes we need the courts to redress a serious grievance. To me, this is an extremely serious situation. This one comes out of Iowa. You see, there's a couple, an engaged couple, Singer and Nordyke. They live in a rental home in Iowa, and they are suing because in February, the city officials came up with this new rental registration and inspection ordinance. That's right. They wrote a city law that, well, according to the couple's lawyer, allows inspectors to obtain a warrant to enter their home without their permission and without any evidence of ongoing code violations. Now, if you are a constitutional scholar, if you've spent much time with the Constitution study, alarm bells should be going off in your head. Because we have this thing called the Fourth Amendment, the right of the people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, and effects against unreasonable searches and seizures shall not be violated. That's exactly what this city in Iowa is apparently trying to do with their ordinance, saying that they have the right to inspect, search a couple's home. Now, they do plan to get a warrant. But I'm sorry, the Fourth Amendment says, and no warrants shall issue but upon probable cause, supported by oath or affirmation, and particularly describing the place to be searched and the persons or things to be seized. So any warrant that the city inspectors would obtain that was not based on probable cause of a code violation, or and that probable cause being supported by oath or affirmation, would be an illegal warrant. It is illegal, it is legitimate, it is therefore void. So now we have this couple, and they are suing. They are suing for a redress. Now here's my question I want to ask. Is that all they are doing? Is it all they are doing to simply sue the city to say, you know, for a redress of this grievance? I'm not saying that they shouldn't sue the city. I'm asking, is that all they're doing? If you live in this Iowa town, if you are a renter in this Iowa town, my question to you is, what do you do when the inspector shows up with an illegal warrant? Now, I'm sure there are many people out there saying, well, you have to do what they say. Actually, no, you don't. There is actually Supreme Court precedent that says, I think it's Big Elk versus United States, that says you can use force to resist an unlawful arrest. By the same standpoint, you can use force when your home is being invaded. And if the inspector does not have a valid warrant, that is an unreasonable search. It is breaking and entering. I'm not a lawyer, but I believe if they touch either of these people, that's assault. It's also a federal crime, 18 United States Code, Section 242, to deprive someone under color of a law protection of the rights protected by the Constitution of the United States, i.e. the Fourth Amendment. So you truly have a situation where, while this suit is going on, if you live in Iowa, you are not subject to an illegal warrant. This is a general warrant. This is the type of stuff that we declared independence for. Right? The idea of general warrants. One of the grievances in the Declaration of Independence is he has erected a multitude of new offices and sent hither swarms of officers to harass our people and eat out their substance. Well, that's kind of what's going on here, isn't it? These are illegal warrants. Therefore, they are void. And that's not just me saying that. That's actually the Supreme Court of the United States, Marbury versus Madison. No act repugnant to the Constitution can be valid. They are void. So what are you going to do? Are you going to sit back and wait and simply put all of your eggs in the basket of the government will protect me, the courts will protect me? Or will we learn to stand up on our own two feet and say, excuse me, Inspector, where's your warrant? I'm sorry, that warrant's not valid. Why? There's no probable cause. Violation of the Fourth Amendment. If you enter my home, that's trespassing. If you force your way in, that's breaking and entering. If you touch me, that is assault. If you do so, you are committing a federal crime, 18 U.S.C. Section 242. Excuse me while I pick up the phone, dial 911, and have the police come over so I can charge you with these crimes should you attempt this. See, that's the difference between subjects and citizens. Subjects are dependent on the will of the government. Citizens inform the will of government. This is not a just power because it is not given by the consent of the governed. This is the idea I want to explore a little further once we come out of, you know, as we come out of the break. Because we have been trained into servitude. We have been taught over and over and over again to just do what you're told. And in many cases, in many ways, that is leaving us open to this idea of we work for government, not the other way around. The idea that we are subjects of a sovereign government rather than sovereign citizens who have created governments to protect our rights. And if we cannot protect our rights ourselves, then we are subject solely to the whim of whoever is in government. Now, before we go out to the break, I want to remind you, I'm doing a Knowing Your Rights tour. I'm right now, I've got North Dakota, Wyoming, and Missouri on the schedule. I am looking for other places to go. If you have an event, if you'd like to see me come to your town and teach about the Constitution, help you understand what your rights are, help you do an analysis of rights that are being violated so that you recognize when they're being abused, when they're being violated, so that you can properly defend them and assert them, please, I'd love to come to your town. Head to constitutionstudy.com/tour and you can see some more about the tour. You can see what dates I already have. And there's a form at the bottom where you can request that I come and speak to your group. And hey, if we can get a two or three different events going, so much the better. It's the knowledge that is necessary. It's the education of what our rights are that will keep us free citizens and not subjects of our state and federal governments and our city and county governments as well. Now, if you're like me and you actually enjoy traveling, the one downside to a lot of the travel is you get worn down and you tend to pick up the crud. You know, you go to a conference, you go to an event, and it's really easy. You're shaking hands with people. You're touching all sorts of stuff. It's really easy to get something, to get the crud. And a lot of people are worried about the crud right now because they've been scared by COVID-19. Well, there's a way that you can help. Help your body. Support your immune system when you're on the go, when you're traveling, or even if you're just going about your normal day's business. And that is with Healthy Cells Immune Super Boost. It gives you the nutrients you need in a travel-ready, easy-to-use gel pack to give you your body what it needs to remain healthy. I've been using the Super Boost for a little over a month. I feel great. It's real easy. It's just a little packet. I take it as a shooter. I just, while I'm eating my breakfast, I suck this thing down. You can also mix it into a drink or a smoothie. It's a simple, easy way. And for someone like me who travels, an easy way to travel with the vitamins and nutrients that I need to keep my body healthy so I can keep doing these events and talking to all these wonderful people. So please check out healthycell.com/outloud. You'll get 20% off your very first order just for being an America Out Loud listener. So check it out. Again, that's healthycell.com/outloud. I recommend the Super Boost. I've used the REM sleep as well. It really works very well. Check it out and then stick with right here. And I'll join you again after this break.
In 2008, the amount of concentrated time people could spend on a task without becoming distracted was 12 seconds. 5 years later, it was only 8 seconds, 1 second less than a goldfish. If you find yourself always distracted or having trouble recalling information, you're likely to fall behind in the demanding, fast-paced 21st century. In other words, brain performance is more critical now than ever. Boost your brain power with Healthy Cells Focus Plus Recall. Science-backed nootropics to sharpen focus, concentrate longer, enhance recall, improve mental speed, learn rapidly, and be more alert. It's a pill-free brain supplement made with maximum absorption technology designed to feed our brains at the cellular level. Take it for a test drive. Go to healthycell.com and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off your first order of Focus Plus Recall. That's healthycell.com. Code OUTLOUD for 20% off.
As we celebrate our five-year anniversary, America Out Loud is expanding its mission through a newly designed website with a host of new contributors, all carrying a vibrant message of hope and survival for this country we love. AmericaOutLoud.com. Together, we'll secure the future for generations to come.
Welcome back, everyday Americans. You've rejoined the Constitution Study. We read and study the Constitution. We teach the rising generation to be free. And if you're here, I'm assuming you want to help read and study the Constitution. You want to teach the rising generation to be free. And I'm glad you could do that. Today, we're talking about judicial oligarchies. The idea that the American people have taken their right to petition the government for redress of grievance and have become dependent on the judiciary. We look to every problem. We look to the solution being, getting a judge. We're going to sue somebody. We're going to get the courts to fix this. Never thinking, what can I do to fix it myself. We've looked at some examples where using the courts, petitioning the government through the courts is the right thing to do. And I think all of them are the right thing to do. But my question is that the only thing we can do? We talked about a teacher that was suspended for opposing being forced to use the pronouns that some student thinks at the time, being forced to speak a certain way. We talked about a county that's got at least three lawsuits going right now based around not only that teacher's issue, but the racial issues going on in the county and in the county school. And before we went to break, we talked about what's going on in Iowa City, that basically says we want to be able to inspect your home. If you rent, you don't have a right to be secure in your house. And I want to go back to that because, you know, I talked a little bit about the lawsuit. And I asked the question, what do you do when that building inspector shows up and attempts to unreasonably search your home? Now, since we've already talked about I want to talk a little bit more about the details of this suit, because to me, this is there's a couple of very important things. So we've got we got some landlords and we've got other tenants, including Singer and Nordyke, who are suing in the Sioux County District Court. And here's the part that I want to point out. They are arguing that these searches violate their rights under the Iowa Constitution. See, when I'm talking about judicial oligarchs, the idea is that almost all of the cases seem to go directly to federal court. They're trying to get it to federal court as fast as they can. They are claiming suits. And of course, you have a situation where you have a citizen of a state suing a city, which is a subsidiary of the state. There is no federal involvement unless they can find a violation of the federal constitution. Now, I've already pointed out there is a violation of the Fourth Amendment, but they're suing as a violation of the Iowa Constitution. Now, Article 1, Section 8 of the Iowa Constitution reads, "The right of the people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, and effects against unreasonable searches and seizures shall not be violated, and no warrant shall issue but upon probable cause supported by oath or affirmation, particularly describing the place to be searched and the persons and things to be seized." Sounds familiar? That's pretty much verbatim the Fourth Amendment to the Constitution of the United States. So why should someone sue in a state court when they can sue in federal court? For the very reason, it's in state court. It's closer to the people. They are, let's face it, what influence do the people of Iowa, do the people of this city have on a federal judge, a district judge, much less a circuit judge, or even the Supreme Court justice? The answer is none. Here they're suing in county district court as a violation of the Iowa Constitution. This, to me, is a much better step than going directly to the federal courts. Now, should the Iowa courts fail these landlords and these tenants, then they may have a cause to go to the federal court, because they, not only is it a violation of the Fourth Amendment, but it is a violation of the 14th Amendment to the U.S. Constitution, which ends with, "Nor shall any state deprive any person of life, liberty, or property without due process of law, nor deny to any person within its jurisdiction the equal protection of the laws." Well, they're denying the landlords of their property by searching it without the proper cause. They are denying the renters of the liberty of being free from government interference from an unreasonable search and seizure. And they are certainly not providing equal protection of the laws, since a law that would apply to a homeowner doesn't apply to a renter or a landlord. But that is after that should only be after the Iowa courts fail. Let's keep things as local as possible, keep them as close to the people as possible. because the when we start making the federal government, especially the federal courts, the oligarch of oligarchs, well, again, we've lost control. We're no longer a republic. We're an oligarchy. So that deals with a lot of the state issues. And I want to start looking at some of the more federal issues. Couple things popped out to me recently. Now, those of you may know, I am a long-term computer geek. I spent 30 years working in IT. I've been a programmer. I've done data center systems engineering. I've lived and breathed computers for well over 30 years. And so when I hear the name Steve Wozniak, bells go off. I know Steve. Well, I don't know him personally, but I know him as a co-founder of Apple. Right? All those nice little iPhones and iPods and iPads and iMacs and iThis and iThat, right? They're all Apple, and that was founded by Steve Jobs and Steve Wozniak. Now, Steve Wozniak sued YouTube because a company was putting together a bogus Bitcoin giveaway, and they were using Mr. Wozniak's image in their YouTube videos. Now, he sued YouTube because they used his video, he used his image in a video to promote this without his permission. Now, here's where things get interesting. This is why I don't strictly trust courts. Because in this court, according to Bloomberg News, a judge, Kulkarni, hope I got that right. If not, I apologize. Says that YouTube was protected by this lawsuit. They were given immunity provided by Section 230 of the Communications Decency Act, otherwise known as 47 U.S. Code Section 230. Now, under Item C of that, you have what are called the Protections for Good Samaritan Blocking and Screening. So according to Section 230, as I, again, I'm not a lawyer, so if they've read something, I haven't. But in looking at this, the only place I see protections or any sort of immunity is C1 says nobody is a treated as a publisher or speaker of any information by another person. In other words, YouTube cannot be held accountable for the or is not the publisher. They are a platform. They are not treated as a publisher. But you go on to say, no provider or user of an interactive computer service shall be held liable on account of any action voluntarily taken in good faith to restrict access to or availability of material that the provider or user considers to be obscene, lewd, lascivious, filthy, excessively violent, harassing, or otherwise objectionable, whether or not such material is constitutionally protected, or any action taken to enable or make available to information content providers or other the technical means to restrict access to material described in paragraph one. Okay, legalese. Let me break this down for you. As I read this, and that is the only part I found in Section 230 that deals with immunity or from liability, is Section C, which says, listen, you cannot be held accountable. You cannot be liable for taking down or restricting access to material, right? That's what it says. Any action voluntarily taken in good faith to restrict access to or availability of material, or any action taken to enable or make available information, content, or others the technical means to restrict access. So the only immunity from liability that YouTube has is if they had taken material down. That is what Section 230 says. Now, does that mean that YouTube is responsible for the content posted on their platform by someone else? I'm not prepared to say that they are, but that's not what Section 230 of the Communications Decency Act says. So that is, you know, so we have a judge who apparently needs a remedial reading class since YouTube did not restrict, take down, or in any manner control access to material. They restrict access to material. They allowed access to material. Now, again, I don't think Mr. Wozniak has a good case against YouTube. YouTube does put in copyright protection tools and other things. I post to YouTube. I know I've got to fill out those forms, right? But I find it interesting when I see a judge says that Section 230 gives YouTube immunity from prosecution, immunity from civil liability for stuff that Section 230 does not say would give them immunity from liability. See, that's where these judicial oligarchs cause trouble. Now, again, Judge Kulkarni may be absolutely right that Mr. Wozniak does not have cause to sue YouTube, since it wasn't YouTube that produced the information, any more than you could sue the United Postal Service for misleading mail that was sent through it, or you could sue the New York Times for a misleading advertisement that was placed. But to pull in Section 230 when it doesn't say that, right? Now it's not what the law says, it's what a judge thinks the law should mean. We have substituted in this simple case, we've seen a judge substitute their opinion for the written law, the statutory law, the law that Congress passed and President signed. That means we are not ruled by laws. We're ruled by judges. Because if a judge can simply say, well, I know it says this, but you know, my understanding is you can't sue them for anything. And again, I believe that Mr. Wozniak does not have a case, not against YouTube. He has a case against the people that used his image without permission. Why would he sue YouTube? Maybe it was easier. Maybe the people who were using his image exist outside the country. We're not within the jurisdiction of the United States. So he has a better chance here. I don't know why. I don't know Mr. Wozniak. I don't know the details. And if he's got more information, you know, someone from you, send me that information, Mr. Wozniak. I'll be more than happy to put it here. Why you think YouTube is liable for the actions of somebody on their platform. Be more than happy to discuss that and put that on the air. But if the judge was correct saying that Mr. Wozniak did not have standing against YouTube, why not find the actual law that says he doesn't have standing because YouTube was not the actor that illegally used his image? Because YouTube has the money. I mean, I don't know why, but my guess is, well, YouTube has the money. YouTube is a U.S. company. Therefore, it's under U.S. jurisdiction. It was easier. Now, I don't know if this damages any other suits that go on, but this to me is an example of a little bit of knowledge. One, a little bit of knowledge saying, let's sue in federal court, even though we don't really have a case against them, but let's see if we can get something through, because let's face it, it's worked in the past. But it's also an example of how can you trust this judge? How can you trust a judge that cannot read the law they're supposed to be using in their decisions? The whole purpose of the judicial branch is to resolve controversies based on the law and the facts. Well, if you get the law wrong, how can we trust your opinion? Now, this is a suit involving one person. What happens when it's district courts, circuit courts, Supreme Court that ignores the plain language of the Constitution? What do you mean, Paul? Well, let's take a couple of examples. The federal court has what they refer to as a third-party doctrine. Why? Because justices thought, listen, if you take your data, if you take your papers, because this is long before cloud storage, if you take your papers and you give them in the possession of a third party, you have no expectation of privacy. And they said, the American people, you know, they don't expect privacy. Well, for example, they don't expect privacy with their bank, when their checking account. They don't expect privacy from the phone company, their calling history. That was the opinion of a judge written in a case that was used to come up with this idea that once you place your information, once you place your papers, your documentation, your data in the hands of a third party, it no longer has Fourth Amendment protections. Doesn't say anything like that in the Constitution. Doesn't say anything like that in the laws of the United States. That was a judge who had an opinion that is now overruling the Constitution, the supreme law of the United States. There's actually a more egregious example. Anytime you hear a case, a lawsuit, any case that gets to a federal court, and they talk about levels of scrutiny. Is it strict scrutiny? Is it moderate scrutiny? Is it what they're talking about is at what point, how hard does a government have to work to prove it has a right to violate your rights? Scrutiny, as used in most courts, most court cases I've read, is this idea that there are times when the government has a compelling interest to infringe on your rights. And the court then gets to decide how hard do they have to work. They're literally saying that in contradiction of to the Constitution, the supreme law of the land, when the supreme law of the land says shall not be infringed, shall not be abridged, they turn around and say, well, it can be infringed if the government has a compelling interest. Funny, when I've read our founding documents, I find only one and only one truly compelling government interest, the protection of our rights. The Declaration of Independence says we have certain we are endowed by our Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, that to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men. Well, therefore, the purpose of government is to secure our rights, not to figure out when they can infringe them, abridge them, when they can decide that they can violate our rights, all on the whim of a handful of justices. That's what I mean by a judicial oligarchy. See, we've put all this power in courts, especially in the federal courts, and then we turned around and let them use precedent or stare decisis to supersede the actual law, to supersede the supreme law of the land, to supersede the statutory law, to put the opinion of judges ahead of that, superior to that. Now, that's not what the law says. That's not the powers that we've consented to. But that's what's being allowed. Because when these judges routinely abuse their oath of office, when they place the opinion of their peers above the supreme law of the land, that is bad behavior. And our representatives in the House of Representatives, the ones we hire every 2 years, let them get away with it, because they don't attempt to impeach them over their bad behavior. Which leads us to even more evils. You have the Department of Justice now says it's going to stop using court orders to seize the records of journalists and others. So what the Department of Justice has admitted that they've been using court orders. When they look at a leak probe, when some information has been leaked, they have been going after journalist records, and they've gotten court orders to do them. Well, here's question number one. Under what circumstances are these judges issuing these orders? Are you telling me that a judge doesn't have to issue a warrant to search and seize records? They can simply say, I say so. It's a court order. I seem to remember the Constitution saying, no, what you really need is a warrant. Where is the probable cause? Because this court order is, while it's not termed a warrant, it's effectively a warrant. It is a court-issued document that says we can search. Where is the probable cause? Where is the oath or affirmation? Where is the specificity of what is to be searched and what and who's to be seen? Where? If it's not there, this is not about the DOJ using court orders. I mean, that's a problem. It's about the judges in the courts that are ignoring the Constitution because the government says it needs this data. So what good is it to fix the law if the judges are just going to ignore it? Tell me, how many judges are being impeached for issuing court orders to seize records without probable cause? Or probable cause that was not supported by oath or affirmation? Where? Everyone is looking at the Department of Justice when we have oligarchs on with black robes that are violating their oath of office, that are behaving badly. Why are they not being impeached? Because we, the people, aren't demanding it. We aren't in the offices of our representatives saying, why are you not impeaching this? The DOJ didn't do this on their own. The DOJ got a court to issue this order. If a judge issued a court order without probable cause, that, to me, impeachment and disbarment. I don't care so much about the bar. Impeach them. If they are found to have done this, why do they still sit in that courtroom? Because we don't treat them as servants of the people. We treat them as oligarchs. Once we put them on a federal bench, we figure they can live there forever unless they do something really, 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 really bad. In other words, they're oligarchs. What else have we got? We have federal courts blocking a Missouri law that bans most abortions. Now, here we have the federal courts interfering in state business because a previous court made up the idea that committing homicide is a matter of privacy. If you read the Roe v. Wade opinion, basically they're saying, listen, the abortion decision is private. Actually, Roe v. Wade says the abortion decision is private, is private. However, the government has an interest in protecting life. But we have, you know, Casey case and other cases. And now we have a judge or a group of judges ignoring the law, making up the idea that the ability to commit homicide, to kill a human being, is now a matter of privacy. So when a state says, no, we're going to put restrictions on that because Roe v. Wade case says, Roe v. Wade opinion said, the court agreed that states could put limitations on abortions. But if you know your history and you recognize that in the Declaration of Independence, we list 27 specific grievances against the king. The very first one is he has refused his assent to laws the most wholesome and necessary for the public good. Tell me, isn't this judge, this federal judge, refusing his assent to law the most wholesome and necessary for the public good? The courts are, you know, if we were to take the Declaration of Independence today, the courts are doing exactly what King George did, exactly what our founding fathers found as reasons to declare independence. I have another one for you before we head out. That is Ohio. The state of Ohio is filing a lawsuit. See, the state of Ohio wants the courts to declare that Google is a public utility. That's right. Ohio Attorney General Dave Yost filed a lawsuit on June 8th asking the court to declare Google as a public utility. Now, why? Well, he wants to put the big tech company under government regulation. In other words, he wants to take the private property of Google to be used for the public good. Where have we heard that before? The Fifth Amendment clearly states that nor shall private property be taken for public use without just compensation. So tell me, Mr. Yost, just how do you plan on compensating Google for taking their property? Oh, but we're not taking their property. No, you're taking control of their property, and you're asking a court to ignore the law and give you what you want. This is an oligarchy. Now, whether the court decides to declare that Google is a public entity, a public utility or not? Where does any court get the authority to simply determine you are now a public utility? That's not the land of the free. That's not the rule of law. How in America can a government official simply ask another government official to grant an edict and take over a private company? If Mr. Yost were serious about this, tell me, Mr. Yost, how are you going to compensate Google for the theft of the property they have? The property they have in the servers and networks and data centers that provide information to the state of Ohio. For the property they have in the software and they've developed. For the intellectual property in their algorithm tech, how are you going to compensate them when you steal their company? I don't care if it's been done before. Theft has been done before. Rape has been done before. Murder has been done before. That doesn't make it legal. But you have an Ohio Attorney General asking the oligarchs in a court to simply declare a private company is now effectively owned and managed by the public. That is grand theft on a scale almost unheard of in this country. It's bigger than Microsoft. It's bigger than AT&T. It was bigger than IBM. This, Mr. Attorney General Yost, is grand theft high tech. And it will happen only because we've allowed men and women in black robes to act like oligarchs rather than simple judges. Now be sure to make America Out Loud your daily stop for all the news, happenings, everything that's going on. We must do our part. We do that by sharing the stories, the articles, the videos, the podcasts. Help us secure America's future and join me here next time for the Constitution Study.
Pay the bills, stay out of jail, love the neighbors and have a few good friends.